Is the learning in your school competency-based? Is it personalized? Is it happening anytime, anywhere? Is it student-owned? In other words, is the learning student-centered? And are all students learning more deeply, more equitably, and becoming career and college ready? If you have these questions, want to know what the research says about them, and are trying to figure out how to implement these ideas in your classrooms and schools, you've come to the right place. Thank you for listening to the Student-Centered Learning Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Barriff, and I've been a principal and teacher in student-centered schools for over 17 years, and I can't wait to share a story or interview that will help you help your students. Welcome back, and today we begin a series of very special episodes. 15 interviews of student-centered educators interviewed by student-centered educators. Our first guest podcaster is Bryant A. Estrada, a Central Falls, Rhode Island native who currently serves as the 8th grade mathematics teacher at the Segway Institute for Learning in Central Falls. Bryant received his BA from Brown University, his secondary math teacher certification from Providence College, and is now working towards his Master's of Education in Urban Teaching from Providence College. He interviews Malika Ali, an education strategy specialist at the Highlander Institute in Rhode Island, where she collaborates on blended learning project implementation in schools and professional development workshops centered around culturally responsive teaching. Enjoy this wonderful interview.
Hello and welcome. Today we have on the podcast a dear friend of mine and former colleague, Malika Ali. Malika, can you please tell us who you are and a fun fact, a little bit about yourself, and maybe what got you into what you're doing now?
Sure. Thank you for having me. My name is Malika Ali, and I'm an educational strategy specialist with Highlander Institute. I've been involved in education for about a decade now, in different capacities. And in my work now, I get to work at various organizational levels and work with students and teachers and school admin and district admin. So I'm excited to be here to talk about something that is really, really important with culturally responsive teaching.
Awesome. And what got you into this position? What's your background in any experiences that got you to your work at Highlander Institute?
Sure. I taught high school science at Noah Leadership Academy in Central Falls, Rhode Island. And that's where you and I got to know each other and got to collaborate. And then moved to the Providence School Department, where I worked as an innovation specialist for academic programs. And then really just started to miss the classroom level again. And moved to Highlander Institute to do some high school redesign work and to do some training around culturally responsive teaching. So I get to call upon my own experiences as a classroom educator and build on that to help coach teachers around their practices.
That's awesome. Cool. So I guess we'll start with talking about culturally responsive teaching. In your own words, what is culturally responsive teaching? Give me your best definition.
The tricky thing about defining it is that it's not a thing. It's not a noun. Culturally responsive teaching is a framework. It's a way of thinking about educating students. I mean, it starts ultimately with the belief that all students can and will be successful. And so then it's our challenge to do what it takes to help students to be successful. So when we think about diverse learners, especially culturally and linguistically diverse learners, we really have to think about it from an equity lens. So in simplest terms, I usually introduce it to teachers as personalized learning with an equity lens. And it uses the principles of neuroscience and how we learn, as well as social-emotional learning, to really think about how we can use the cultural reference points of students to build upon and deepen their learning and help them make connections and construct new knowledge.
So why do you think it's important for teachers or schools to implement culturally responsive teaching in their practice and curriculum, or even in their school structures?
When we don't think about culturally responsive teaching and the way in which students learn and how they build their prior knowledge, where their beliefs come from, their interests, how aspects of identity play into who they are and how they operate, when we don't consider those things, we're actually not facilitating their learning at as deep a level as we could be. There are so many instances in which I've seen teachers discredit students' learning or fail to recognize that when a student isn't performing or demonstrating mastery in the way that they could be, it isn't because of a lack of capacity. Sometimes it has to do with the emotional and psychological conditions in the space that they're in that prevent them from learning at full capacity. And so I think it's, you know, as teachers, it's we want all of our students to be successful. And so when we think about how kids learn, how different students learn, and no matter what population you're dealing with, think about and try to access the cultural reference points that kids are coming into the space, the learning space with, like we will see that they will perform at higher levels.
Do you see like any connections between culturally responsive teaching and a learner's socio-emotional well-being?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think they're inextricably linked. When students are in a space in which they feel that all of the aspects of their identity and culture are affirmed and respected, they're more likely to feel positively, feel trusting, feel open to learning. And that's absolutely directly tied to social-emotional learning. I don't think that you can separate the two. It's just that culturally responsive teaching explicitly calls out the influence of culture in learning. So I think they're absolutely linked. And sometimes we'll talk about one and we could be talking about the other in the same vein. It's just that one very specifically calls out equity and culture.
So if we talk about what culturally responsive teaching is in the classroom, can you give some basic characteristics or some examples of what it may look like with a teacher who's incorporating it in their class? And then after that, if you can tell us a little bit about how it may look like at the school level. I know you've worked with Providence Public Schools with culturally responsive teaching, professional developments or workshops. And if you can add some of that, that'd be awesome as well.
Sure. One thing I want to preface this with is that culturally responsive teaching doesn't necessarily mean that you're teaching about race or that you're explicitly teaching about multicultural education or anything like that. You can have a lesson that is designed in such a way that you've done the work ahead of time to really think about and consider aspects of deep culture that students are coming to the learning space with, and then really facilitate learning in a way that allows them to be co-constructors of the learning experience. That would be culturally responsive teaching. An example that I like to use just to illustrate that is one of a teacher who recognized that the demographics of the school that she worked in did not reflect the teachers. So the student demographics didn't reflect the mm-hmm. teacher demographics. And as a white teacher, it was really important to her for her students to see people of color in positions of authority and power, and to allow them to help them to see and learn from people from their community. And so she made the effort to really get to know her students and their families and their communities. And by doing that, she was able to learn about the strengths and the things that the families were known for. So one student's mother was known for her cooking and baking. She was an amazing baker in the community. And this teacher invited her in to co-teach a lesson on wow. ratios and fractions. In that lesson, you know, they weren't talking about race at all. They weren't talking about identity. But the students got to benefit from learning from a person who's from their community who looks like them, who was teaching a lesson on fractions and ratios through a hands-on experience of baking. And it was a really powerful, very simple example of a culturally responsive practice in which that teacher had done the work of first self-reflecting on her own identity, reflecting on her students' identities, thinking about the impact of seeing yourself reflected in positions of power and around you, and really bringing the community into the classroom. So I often hear that math teachers will say, like, oh, how do I do this in math? You know, do I just, like, put in, you know, different names in my math problems, or and one thing that I like to really, really underscore is this idea that it's about the mindset work that teachers do. So there's a framework that I sort of developed in doing this work to help kind of guide the thinking and processing, and it starts with teacher mindset. And then once the teacher has really like thought about and self-reflected on his or her own identity, really like dug into this idea of sociocultural awareness and recognize that we all have very different worldviews, and that our students come to us with their own worldviews, and that we can gather that information from them and really use it in designing personalized, you know, learning experiences, then, you know, there's this idea of information gathering, where we want to, as educators, learn these things from our students, from their families, from their communities, learn their interests, learn about aspects of their identity, which then guides us to the next domain, which is building a classroom culture that is affirming and positive, in which students feel like they are contributors to not only the space and the culture, but also the learning itself. And then that guides us to the next part, which is like a learning partnership between the teacher and the student, where the teacher can be, as Zaretta Hammond calls it, a warm demander, and the student can be an independent learner. Because that's ultimately the purpose, is for us as educators to help students to be independent learners. And then to design these constructivist learning experiences so that students can be co-constructors of their learning, which builds mastery and improves student self-efficacy. So that's a very long-winded answer to your question. But at a classroom level, it's important to really think about the framework aspect of it, because that helps the teacher to really like explore what that means in his or her own classroom in authentic ways. And then as for the school level, it's really facilitating what teachers need to be able to do that work at the classroom level. So how is the school facilitating communication and community building with families and communities? That's a huge part of it. How is the school facilitating the teacher's ability to, you know, break away from what we now consider the canon and to really think about choosing texts and choosing resources and curricula that really speak to what students want to learn about, and that are authentic to who they are? The school and administrators have a powerful role in helping to facilitate that.
Have you noticed in the schools where you've been working in an increase in engagement with the families, or even with the students in the classrooms? Any kind of change that has happened since you've started in those schools?
Sure. I think it, you know, I would love to explicitly track that kind of data. We're very early in this work to be able to have like data on that. But I will say that the teachers who care deeply about culturally responsive teaching and have sort of self-identified as wanting to learn more, they're the ones who tend to do the work to really reach out to the community and get to know their students' families and bring them into the learning spaces. And they also go to their students' community spaces, and they have that close relationship. And so that connection, that relationship between the parent and teacher, is not necessarily like between the parent and the school. It tends to be between the parent and the teacher who is engaging in those practices. So, you know, when we think about it at a school level, it would be wonderful to really see examples of schools that really champion this as an entire community, and then, you know, scale those practices so that they are really working as like a cohesive ecosystem of support to bring families in. And there certainly are those examples. But, you know, where I've seen growth in really positive and powerful ways, it's been with individual teachers who've really committed to doing the work and to trying to involve themselves in the communities of the people that they're serving.
Now, you also brought up math. So as a math educator, I often struggle with incorporating CRT into my curriculum. I know there are a lot of practices within it that just, I feel, come naturally just with the type of teacher that I am. Now, my question is, you mentioned with like ratios and fractions, right? And a lot of times we tend to learn more about that at the earlier levels, usually up until seventh grade. Now, that's obviously foundational skills that are necessary all throughout schooling, all throughout life. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you have any examples or have heard of ways that teachers have incorporated culturally responsive teaching practices with higher level mathematics.
Sure. Yeah, I think one of the easiest entry points for, and actually easy is probably not the right word, but entry points for math teachers is through project-based learning and really thinking critically about the kind of projects that you're engaging students around. Are they authentic to their interests and identities, to their communities? Are you able to construct problems, or are they able to construct or articulate problems that their communities are facing, that they are facing, that they can problem solve around collaboratively and individually, and demonstrate math concepts through that? I mean, our communities, especially like Black communities, have been doing project-based learning since it became a buzzword in education. Like, that's what we've been doing since before integration of schools. But the difference is that in our communities, the problems that we were solving were problems that we needed to solve. You know, if the roof was broken, how are we going to use math to fix it? You know, if something's going on in the community or in the school, like how can we come together as a community of learners and educators, all of us, to really solve these problems? I think that's one of the most important and effective ways to engage students is around problems that they actually care about. The other thing is, and I want to go back to instructional practice because that's such an important part of culturally responsive teaching. So we know that there are all these standards that our students have to learn. And one of the most effective and important qualities and practices of a culturally responsive teacher is to do whatever it takes to help an individual learner grasp a particular concept. So how am I, as an educator, really challenging my student to individually to try everything they can to be able to solve a problem, to not give up, to engage in productive struggle, mm-hmm. to be independent learners. I mean, math is probably the content area, math and science, I would say, are two content areas in which it, you know, teachers have a difficult time, probably the most difficult time, with getting students to move from dependent learners to independent learners. And there's so many strategies to use. In Zaretta Hammond's book, Culturally Responsive Teaching in the Brain, she shares many, many examples. And I think those are particularly relevant in math. But I think you know, we have to start with what do students care about? What's authentic to them? And we also want to remind them, I always try to remind my students that their communities, the cultures from which they come, contributed so much to our knowledge base. And when they see themselves in the producers of knowledge, the discoverers of knowledge, I think that ties you to that, as a learner, to that content area a little more deeply. And so I think helping students get to know the famous people from, you know, who share cultural backgrounds as them is important, but that's not all. It's really like, how do we make learning authentic to them?
How do we make them the practitioners of the actual content, right? Absolutely. So like not just be students that are learning math, but how do we make them learn as mathematicians, exactly. or learn as scientists, as readers? Now, I like that you brought up science. I'm wondering, in your practice as a high school science teacher in the past, can you give an example of maybe some sort of project or strategy that you used that was very effective in your classroom that may be effective for other science teachers out there?
Sure. It's very difficult to choose one thing. I think for me, if I'm thinking about it from the perspective of the framework that I mentioned, the domain that I really focused on was around the learner partnership. Because without building community, without gaining trust, without building relationships, and without getting to know students, their families, their cultures, their histories, their identities, their interests really, really, really deeply, it's very difficult to actually get students to want to take ownership in the classroom and feel like co-constructors of curricula and of their learning experiences. And so I would say in a broad sense, it was the way in which, we were pretty lucky. We were in a small community. Central Falls, as you know, is 1 square mile. So getting to know students and their families is easier than it might be in some places. But I also tried to make sure that students felt affirmed in all aspects of their identities and that they saw themselves reflected in scientists. So as an example for an earth science class that I taught, I remember deliberately seeking out examples of, you know, there was a video we watched of a Mexican paleontologist, and we have a lot of English language learners in Central Falls, and I wanted my students to hear a scientist speaking in Spanish, hear and see a scientist speaking in Spanish. And so in the video he starts by speaking in Spanish, and he's on the site, he's talking about this fossil that was discovered in northern Mexico, and then the English is dubbed over it. And I'll never forget the first thing was a student immediately commented on, and I didn't say anything about the fact that this scientist's identity, but a student commented on it, and he was a Latino student, not from the same country, he's Puerto Rican, but he did not want the conversation to start about science. He wanted to start about the identity, and we actually took 5 minutes, maybe up to 10 minutes, to talk about this scientist. And I remember the student actually said to me, he asked, like, how did he become a scientist? How did he become a paleontologist? And we had a conversation about it, and that was really powerful. So something as simple as that actually, like, can be really meaningful to students, just as a hook to then dig into the curricula itself and the learning experiences itself. Because then he had questions about that particular lesson that he, all of a sudden cared about. And we know that when we can hook students in engaging ways, that's a really important part of culturally responsive teaching. So whatever it is that hook is for different kids, that can help them really direct their full attention towards something that might be very difficult and actually be more likely to engage in productive struggle around difficult things. I also really tried to give students a lot of voice, choice, and agency in the classroom around the kinds of projects that they did or chose to do, so that they would feel like they were truly directing their own learning pathways. And I think in another important part of culturally responsive teaching in any content area, but especially in science, is the inquiry process. And we do inquiry in different ways. And so, we have our classically defined methodologies, but it's also really incredible for me as a former science teacher to watch my kids engage in the inquiry process in ways that are sort of natural and inherent to them. So I always try to solicit that from students, mm-hmm. so that could be the starting point from which to tie the new knowledge to.
Especially because the inquiry process isn't always as neat as a scientific method.
Exactly.
It can start from somewhere totally different and then just goes from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The key is curiosity, and people are inherently curious, but sometimes we do more damage by focusing so much on how much content we have to get through rather than really engaging in students' inherent curiosity and inquiry processes and the natural scientific mind that they're already coming to our classrooms with.
Thank you. So lastly, where can the listeners learn more about culturally responsive teaching or any specific resources? I know you brought up Zaretta Hammond's work. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you'd like to share?
Absolutely. I think there are some really important texts that I'd recommend. I would look into Geneva Gay, her work around culturally responsive teaching, Ana Maria Viegas and Tamara Lucas, their book, Educating Culturally Responsive Teachers, Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed. Those are just some to start with that really help educators with the thinking around what culturally responsive teaching would look like in their context.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to the Student Centered Learning Podcast. Let us know what you think about this episode or what you tried in your school by commenting on our Facebook page. You can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher, and please leave a rating so others can find us. You can also follow us on Twitter at STUCNTR Podcast. And remember, students learn deeply when they are at the center.